All right, welcome to another episode.
Number two
of Deep Thinking with Michael Gugis and Ed Sorbo, thoughts all about motorcycle road racing, the finest sport on the planet. Today we are coming to you from the lanai outside of the palatial offices of Lindemann Engineering. We're over at Ed's shop.
When we bought this place, I had no idea the hidden benefit, which was being able to drive down the street on my dirt bike and go up into them there hills.
Why would you want to ride a dirt bike?
Yeah, because you get dirty. The winner is the guy who comes back the dirtiest, by the way. Just like skiing, the winner is the person who turns completely white, head to toe, looks like Frosty when you get to the bottom of the hill. If you make it to the bottom of the hill. But
yeah,
anyway,
yeah, well, hold
winter
on a second.
Testing.
Let's go into the topic now of testing. Sounds like they're going to come bomb us. I hope it's not another military one, because Ed and I are so dangerous, right?
That's the local police helicopter.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It is. Wow.
Yep.
How come it's got your name on the bottom of it?
my house in Hawaii was single wall construction like all the other houses there. And when the helicopters would fly over regularly, because we were between the Marine Corps base and the Army base,
Yeah. It
would shake the whole house.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because those helicopters, they don't bother with noise suppression on those.
Sound of freedom.
Exactly. Sound makes the bad guys quake in their boots. All right. Speaking of testing, lots of guys test on dirt and ride dirt bikes in the off season. Some guys don't at all. What's your thought on that? Does it actually help you?
Oh, it helps huge. And the key reason why you use small dirt bikes is you're going slower. So
right.
When you fall down in the off season,
doesn't hurt so
you
much.
Screw up your season you're getting paid for less often, because you get less injury. But the control things that you're practicing and getting used to, sliding the front, tucking
right.
the back, whatever, saving it, it's all relative. So you can do it at 10 miles an hour, or you can do it at 300 miles an hour. Better to practice it at 10. And it's way cheaper, right?
That's...
You can run that dirt bike all off season, change
right.
the oil, once, you know, cleaning the air filter is the only thing you got to do regular. And it's wicked crazy fun. And think about it, right? Anything that you've got to do every day, it's simpler if you enjoy it.
And that part's true. That part I get. But, you know, you look at guys like, I don't think Josh Hayes rides a dirt bike. I know Matt Mladen didn't. That's just entirely beneath him. You know, when you get to that level, is it still a benefit?
It's a benefit, and it's, you know, Josh plays tennis at a very high level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he rides his bicycles a ton.
Okay.
Whatever the thing is that works for you is the thing that you need to do, right?
Okay.
Our sport is individual enough that there's not going to be any one answer. I'm sure Josh goes dirt bike riding when he gets the chance.
Okay.
You know, it's a factor of cost.
Right.
And
availability. Right.
You know, you can't just go get on your superbike and ride it all damn day long. It costs too much. The track, you have to rent a track. You need an ambulance there. You know, there's all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just impractical.
I guess it's impractical for most of us. I still think at the Marquez level or at the
Well, those
the
guys
level.
Are riding those bikes.
And they're also training on the flat track, which, I mean, it's hard to argue with the effectiveness of it when you look at all three of our world champions this year, all trying on the same dirt track together.
I watched a video of Lorenzo and some friend of his from Moto2 somewhere
just
going bonkers on what looked like scooterish things in a parking lot around cones,
right?
You know, and the real thing is that you're training your brain to continue to be at that high level and fast thinking,
right?
And if you take 6 months off, I can give you a great example of this. Back when I was racing full time in the AMA, we always went to Daytona first,
right?
Right, the fastest, badassest track we had. So you spend the whole off season sitting around doing normal people stuff,
right.
And you go to Daytona, it takes you 2 days to get up to the speed of the rushingness and all of that, looking so much farther ahead, getting your focus out there. And so I started going to the fastest track I could to Willow Springs before I headed to Daytona, and it made a noticeable difference.
Really?
Even if I just made one weekend race and then drove to Daytona, my brain was that much more in tune when I got there.
Right,
you know?
Because there really isn't any place else where you're going that fast for that
yeah,
long.
Yeah, nothing you do in the regular workday world prepares
well,
you for this.
I'm also thinking of the tracks here, especially in Southern California. There's nothing Well, it has that kind of speed.
Well, and this was so long ago that Chuck Walla didn't even exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, Vegas streets.
There is nothing that has the speed and the duration of the speed as the Bay King at Daytona.
Right.
And people watch, you watch the bike go by on TV and whatever, and it looks like all smooth and nice and whatever. And you know, it's true that the distance from the dip and the crest of a undulation on the banking may be 100 yards, but at almost 200 miles an hour, freaking bouncing your head off the gas tank. That's why we have pads on the gas tank,
right. So
you put your chin down on there and try not. And dude, the first time you're at full speed and your head bounces up above the bubble, nearly rips your freaking head off. You're like, oh, I'm not doing that again.
Never doing that again.
You know, in most tracks, if you're not fully tucked in, if you're just like looking over the bubble on your R6, it's
no big
not
deal.
That big of a deal. At Daytona, it's like 3 seconds a lap slower.
Where was Chris? Chris Ulrich was testing someplace, and he had taken a new Arai. That was, they're all made safety-wise to be at MotoGP level. I'll always race in an Arai or a Shoei. It doesn't bother me. I'll race in anything that they make. But this one was designed for street use in terms of its aerodynamics. And it was some track with some crazy long straightaway, and he was on a superbike, and he got to the end of the straight and sat up. And then there was a conversation he had next time, and he was in the office with me. He's like, why didn't you tell me this? I'm like, I don't go as fast as you, man.
One of the tricks I had to learn for braking for turn one at Daytona was you can't just pop up like you normally do and start braking.
It,
even once you get used to the rush of wind and your body being pushed back and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
it's shaking your head and your focus is screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And so at Daytona, I start to brake while still in the tuck. And then come up after I got rid of the first, you know, 50 miles an hour or something, and you back down to the speed you're more used to. And, you know, maybe that helps to throw a few guys a little deeper past me. Well, I'll just wait till Sorbo sits up. Oh, how's he making that corner? Bye-bye.
He's not.
You know?
That was so funny.
Anyway, we were going to talk about winter testing.
We're getting there.
We're getting
there. Yeah, last
this
night.
This is called digression, folks.
This isn't. These are the jokes. What do you expect? The dog act? Dip your waitress. Enjoy the veal. Last night I was going to sleep, and I was watching some racing from Qatar. Qatar has its own superbike series. And it was great because it's a long, long front straight at Qatar. And they cut to some dude. They cut to his onboard as he's going into turn one. And he goes like whistling past two people on the inside. And you're like, oh man, that's not going to work. But apparently he scared those other two guys bad enough that all three of them blew the corner and he came out of it in the lead. So I guess it did kind of work. That was freaking cool, man.
Mike Baldwin used to deliberately put his bike into a massive tank slabber, according to stories that I heard. Now, this is back in the days when bikes commonly went into massive, dangerous, scary tank slabbers. So, you know,
it would
seem credible. And that would get the guys behind him to check up for a moment and break the draft, and then he would continue on his way. He won a lot of races in AMA Formula One, so perhaps the technique worked.
Hey, I'll say this one last thing about Qatar. You would be shocked at the number of women that are on their superbike grids.
Cool.
Nina Prince from Germany is a regular podium finisher there, and they run two classes. That was the one I was telling you about where they bought like a crate load of 2005 Yamaha R6s, and they're for lease, and that's the second class on the track with the superbikes. Half of those riders are women.
I think
it's
all
really
of
cool.
The leaders of all of the societies on the planet who are suppressing their women would be surprised by the benefit, both economical and social economical and in all other categories, that would happen in their countries if women were allowed to participate fully, not the least of which would be some punky boys getting their asses handed to them on superbike races.
I'm telling you, one of those 600 races, the top two finishers were women. That guy standing on the third spot of the podium, he did not look happy.
he's just a wimp. There's no difference between men and women that has any bearing whatsoever on how fast you can ride a motorcycle.
To road
None.
Race.
Okay.
Testing, winter testing. What's the purpose? Why are we doing this?
Well, first tell me something fun and exciting that's going on.
World Superbike. New regulations for next year. And this is the cool thing. Because there's new regulations for next year, the blackout period for winter testing, very short. All the teams said,
We need more time.
We need more time to get ready.
And tell us what blackout periods were for. That was to reduce costs, right?
Right, allegedly. And you know,
it wasn't just for reducing costs. It used to be that the season would end, and then testing would pretty much start, and these people never got to go home and see their families and have a break, mental break to recharge, et cetera. And the big teams all realized, hey, listen, we got to give these guys some times off.
Right.
We have to have a – we had this problem in Hawaii. We raced 12 months a year because we could.
Same thing with Willow, right.
And I was the guy that convinced them to change that. So we in Hawaii before Willow stopped racing in December because we noticed, you know, people don't have any money for one thing.
Going right.
And it made the new season, January through November seem more like a season, and bike people showed up with new bikes instead of having them be in the middle of the year and stuff like that, and it increased enthusiasm, and we got a greater number of total entries than when we just raced all of them. So it's cool to call up our friends in December and go, hey, we're racing, how are you doing? But we still had a track day in December, and it was good enough.
Right, and it was
so anyway, they put in a blackout for all these very good reasons, and now the blackout period has been shortened, according to Michael, because they got all these new rules. So new thing did they discover?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. Not a whole lot. They've got a new price cap on the electronics for World Superbikes, okay? The problem is that, or the thing that nobody saw coming, was that the price on motorcycle rider aid electronics is plummeting. It's plummeting. It's so cheap now that anybody can buy pretty much whatever they want for well under the price cap. So all you've really done here is you've taken the cost of buying a really high-end system and the money that you've saved from now buying lower systems, you're not going to spend it on the extra month that you're going to spend going testing.
Well,
you know?
Right, that's the nature of what we do. Racing is never going to be cheap. It's always going to be about spending every penny that you can get a hold of and every minute that you can spend doing it. So why do we go testing? So for most people, for some context here, right? You show up at your race, and you know you've never been to the racetrack before, so you know that you need to figure out what the gearing's going to be.
Right.
So you go on the internet or you talk to your friend, and you get some idea, and you put that on there. And your first session, you're testing the gearing and learning which way the track goes and all that stuff. And then that flows into something. At the end of this session, X is your biggest problem.
Right.
And in the next session, that's your focus to fix X. And then after that, there's a new thing. Y is now your biggest problem, and you keep going along. And it's kind of haphazard, but it works.
Yeah.
And so
you need time.
When you go to your first track day for the purpose of testing, right? You go, hey, listen, I can go to track day. I can read 10, 20-minute sessions. It's way more track time. I'll go, right? You go there, and you more or less do the same thing you do in race practice. Okay? And it works.
Yeah.
It's better than not testing.
Right.
But if you're going to fly guys all over the country or drive across the country, fly guys all over the world, drive across the country, whatever, you want to have something more set up, right? You've
more
got
structured.
A guy at the factory, an engineer, and he has this idea to solve this problem with the frame. So he builds a new frame. So then, okay, you're going to ride the frame. So what you do when you're testing really well is you make a list and you make a plan of what you want to do. And what you want, and that's when you hear the guys go, oh, we had all these things to get through.
We had a test routine.
We had a new gizmo that we wanted to put on and see what it did.
Right.
Right? So they made up a plan of the gizmos they want to test, and they work through it.
Right.
Now, generally speaking, you need to start with some kind of get the rider warmed up thing. So you got, you know, here's your setup from the last time you raced here.
So they don't get rusty like the 6 months that we were talking about.
Exactly. And you need the guy up to speed before his data's any good to him.
Right. What did Mladen used to say? If I'm not on my lap times from last time we were here, don't change anything on the
Mladen
bike.
Is famous at Road America in practice at an AMA weekend. He's out riding around. He's not going very fast. He comes into the pits. The crew's ready to do whatever he needs them to do because they can see his lap times. And he says, don't do anything. It's all me. He walks away. He gets his head in it. You know, I don't know what he did. Drank 3 coffees, whatever. He comes back. He gets on the bike. He goes back out. Now he's back up to regular Mladen speed.
Right.
And now everything makes sense. And they start. And that's rule number one. You got to be honest with yourself. You got to know that you're riding good or you're not. You know, obviously, if you've got a team, you're recording lap times. If it's you personally and you don't have an onboard timer and you don't know what your times
are, you're just guessing.
You're practicing religion.
Like those bloggers. I got a race engineer who lives in my neighborhood. He talks about a blogger who would tell you whether or not the modification he did to his engine made the car faster or slower based on his sensation through the seat of his pants.
Yeah.
He's just like, what's the point?
Well, and that's better than not even driving the car at all. It's definitely not a repeatable measurement.
Is part of the reason that we go winter testing to give the factories, at least the big teams, will know that when they show up at the first race, they're not going to look like complete idiots. They were at least, you know, they're in the ballpark.
Yeah, there's 100 reasons. There's keeping all those...
Oh, yay, food has arrived! Thank you, Catherine.
My lovely wife.
We will always give a shout-out for food, yo.
These guys are at such a different level than we are, right? They have employees that they're keeping busy at the factory.
Right.
And yeah, you don't want to look like an idiot. But let's say you came up with widget number 27 you want to try on the motorcycle, right?
Right.
At a minimum, you need to know that the guys know how to install it, how to serve it, what might break that you didn't think of.
Right.
Right. You know, I'm sure they have some way of destruction testing it back at the factory. If it's an engine part, right, they put it on a dyno and they run it.
Right.
But the real world is never the same as testing. There's a famous admiral that said that the test that I prefer is 12 inches to the foot.
What the hell does that
mean? In other words, you use the thing for real.
Okay,
right?
You didn't make a test
and an experiment. You did all that first.
Right.
But, right, you want to know if the cannon really works. You put it on a ship, you sail it out to sea, and you shoot at a target.
Right.
Right? Preferably a target that's shooting back.
That's
then
helpful.
You really know.
Yeah, that's helpful. Well,
that's why we invent little wars before the big wars, practice. Right?
Isn't that funny how that always seems to work in history?
Funny, not the word, but it does happen.
All right, there's a couple other things that are kind of cool about winter testing. One of them that occurs to me is that...
Pictures of guys sitting around somewhere in the rain waiting to go on track?
No. Those are just hysterical for us. But there are pictures. There are pictures of your bike in cool livery. You get to actually sell advertising space to people who can't afford to have advertising space on your bike during the regular season. Rossi sells special winter edition helmets. This
guy's like, a genius,
exactly.
Isn't he?
Exactly. Oh, God, the AGV one from last winter's... It's like a $1,200, $1,300 helmet.
I want to make a point about this winter testing. So
okay. You
turn on MotoGP.com and you watch the best guys race on the best tracks in the world
right. With
the best safety equipment.
Right.
They can race in the slicks in the pouring rain at Argonne. Right.
Right.
They can crash such that their bike slides for half an hour and still doesn't hit anything.
Right.
Okay? Now, go to winter testing. You have to go just as fast.
Right.
For no points.
Right.
And presumably they have as much air fence and whatever out there and all, but it's not the same. You want to understand the difference between a pro and an amateur, between a regular human being. Josh Hayes and guys like that go out and ride at race pace on a freaking Wednesday in the drizzle or whatever bullshit stuff is going on.
Right.
Hey, Josh, we don't know what this tire is going to do. Go give it a shot for us.
Right.
And 80% speed, the tire's going to be fine.
Right.
Josh has to go ride it at 100%. You know, boss, I think it's okay. I only had to save the front twice per lap. Dude,
right?
That is difficult.
Tito Rabat, Moto2 champion, lives in, spends most of his days at a motorhome at Almeria. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's a track in Spain. Gets up every morning, has his own Moto2 bike, goes out. And first six laps, he's at lap record pace. That's how he spends his days. That's a pro. Dude, people think this is a fun job to have.
It is, but not all of it.
No, there are parts of it that you could not pay me to do, you know? The other thing about winter testing is that you get opportunity to give other sponsors some love.
That's new to me. That's a good idea.
It's a great, dude. Rossi's a genius. You get the opportunity to, this is really one of the benefits, you get the opportunity to have your riders at speed on the track and nobody can beat them because it's just you, right? So there's the opportunity to build some positive public relations, that sort of thing, you know?
Well, you can, and also it's the only way to build a team.
Yeah.
Right? So at the end of a season, this is why you see all this stuff about the guy took his whole crew with him when he moved to wherever, right? Because once you've established a relationship with these guys and they know what you're talking about, when you say, yeah, it won't turn back, right?
Right.
You don't have to mess with that stuff. Communication within the team is critical. My favorite story about that is I think it was Barros. There's a whatever language problem, and he's coming into
the
pits,
Brazilian, yeah.
And he's saying it's better, and they're hearing it's better, so they keep giving him more of what's making it worse, until he comes back and he says, "Are you trying to kill me? It's better!" And they go, oh, better, not better, right? And so your first test is to get through that kind of shit.
So here's the question. The teams that have resources, they can go winter testing. They show up at the first race.
Yep.
They're set. Mm-hmm. Privateer teams are even further back than they would have been if everybody had just shown up on Friday morning, the first race. The
solution to that is get yourself a ride on the factory team. Right?
All right, time for the two-minute warning. One last thought. Ed, ABS brakes on race bikes.
It's a wonderful thing for you to have on your bike. I love the fact that it's in all my cars and that my mom has that.
Right.
But if we're racing, I'm going to kick your ass and your skirt with non-ABS brakes.
I see. And how are those drum brakes working out on your race bike, Ed?
Don't have any drum brakes on my race bike. That technological hurdle was jumped before I got there. But I understand the argument against disc brakes, although I wouldn't have agreed with it.
You know, that was really funny when I read that in Donahue's autobiography. It's like, wow, I guess anybody can now just use the brakes all they want, all the time, whenever they want. I'm like, I'm sorry, is this like, is Alan Funt here? You know, am I being punked? Is this a joke? All right, hey, thanks for listening. We'll be back with another episode of Deep Thinking About Motorcycle Road Racing with Ed Sorbo and Michael Gugis.
Aloha.
Aloha. Thanks for coming along.